Well, what happened was I was coming in, I was doing the open mic somewhat regularly at the Dayton Funny Bone, enough to where people knew who I was.
Who was booking you?
Nobody was booking me. This was for the open
mic.
Just
open mic.
And so then you got married, I showed up for that.
Right, I remember
and
that.
I didn't bug Doc about work because, you know, if I could just sit in the place.
Sure.
And then the very next open mic, and by this time he definitely knew who I was. I come up and I go, hey, I really want to MC here. Can you watch me tonight? And he said, well, I don't know. I got to pick up the headliner from the airport. I don't know if I'm going to be able to. And I go, how about you put me up first, watch me, and then I'll go pick up the headliner for you.
Nice move.
What a guy.
Nice move.
That's out of my playbook.
Yeah.
He's like, you know what? You open in February?
He goes, he started laughing. He goes, all right, I'll watch it. And so he watched me, and then went and got the headliner. And then when he came back, he goes, here's my card. We'll give you a week.
Nice.
And
he used you a good bit. I mean.
Yeah.
For an out-of-town guy. I mean, you were there a couple times a year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he always put me with Urban Acts, actually.
Really?
Yeah, he always put me with Huggy Lowdown and Damon Williams.
Damon Williams, that was the...
I was with Jimmy Schubert one time, but that was a fallout. But yeah, I love the Dayton Funny Bone. Love it. It's a great club.
Yeah.
And it really, I really thought of it as my home away from home. I mean,
right.
I was at Dayton more than I was anywhere else.
Was that the first club that you started emceeing regularly at?
Well, Comedy Caravan.
Okay, but you're from Louisville?
Yeah.
You know, I my cousin is the pastor of one of the biggest black churches in Louisville, Kevin Cosby. So I have over 200 cousins in Louisville.
Is that it? Boy, I would have thought.
Well, let's get you a week.
Hey, you know what? Hey, keep that week you had next week.
Yeah. Come on down. We'll do guesties, but we'll pay you back now. We'll close it from the guestie spot. Now, it was, I only ever go down there, for family reunions and stuff like that and stuff, but it's like amazing. Having the last name Cosby for me is always been really awesome, not because of the Bill thing, but because of how big my family is in Louisville. And I had a couple of my uncles played for UK, you know, had full ride scholarships playing basketball and stuff. So it's like one of those things.
That's the University of Kingston, Ohio.
Yeah.
It's a small community college in Southern
Ohio.
It's
like Burger King, but it's UK. But yeah, no, I have a huge desire. I've never performed in Louisville.
Let's see what we can do.
Best, dude. That's what I'm saying. You gotta get in there before it sells.
That's gonna sell though. It's gonna sell to another.
Yeah, we thought we had locked up.
Yeah.
But I think we've got another offer out there that I really hope they get it. Actually, it's the staff trying to buy it.
Really? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But you've got a lot of staff down there that have been there for years.
Yeah, 20 years.
You didn't flip them when you bought it.
Right.
Yeah, that's good. Especially if they're good staff. I mean.
Well, I mean, if they're going to buy the fucker, yeah, that's a good staff right there.
Yeah.
No, I love it down there. It's absolutely one of my favorite clubs. All right, let's wrap this up.
Let's wrap it, and let's get this show on the road.
All
right, we're live, guys.
Oh, yeah,
dirty
shit. Come on
up. This is the second time this week was recorded. In a comedy venue, not the same one, mind you.
Right, we're multi.
We're at the base of the Roots. We're at Wiley's Comedy Joint. This is where I went on stage for the first time as an open micer. I'd done comedy twice before, like at a bar in Springfield, and then a year and a half later, I came here and did an open mic, and that was all. Like, it was like, you know, there was no way I was going to take another year and a half off after doing it in a comedy club. And it was, I had my friends came out, the place was packed. Sunday nights here are magical. Have you ever been here on a Sunday night?
Who's our guest?
Well, let's let him introduce himself. Have you ever been here on a Sunday night, mister?
I have not, but I've got a great story from years ago from when I first started. I came here, you know how, like, when you first start off and you're open micing and... But yet you have a press kit.
Yes. Yes. And an agent.
No business whatsoever showcasing for work. But I showed up here and I gave Rob my press kit. Thinking, you know, I'm big time.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, thank you very much. Walks by a curtain, comes back out. I'm sitting there talking. I go, what do you ever do with those? He goes, they sit back there for a couple weeks and I throw them in the dumpster. And at that moment, I realized how ridiculous it was that I had a press kit.
It is funny though, but like some people live and die by a press kit still. Like if you don't have a, they'll be like, you don't got a press kit? I'm like, well, I have a website.
Yeah. No, I need a hard copy.
Look, my Apple IIe don't even get on the internet.
Yeah. But email me at AOL.com.
That's right. We all work for a guy who does that. Jamie Utley is our guest tonight. How do you like to be your comic first?
Yes.
And then what did you do before comedy?
I did a little bit of everything. A lot of, like, I'm a manager at a dollar store, a lot of retail, a lot of grocery store work.
Okay. And what was, just real quick backstory, what was the home life like? Parents still married?
Both of them are deceased.
Deceased, okay. But they were together, in the home, and you were brothers and sisters?
Yep.
And abusive childhood?
I'm
trying to find out where the pain comes from.
Okay. Well, you know, I always felt like I didn't belong, like I didn't fit in.
Mm-hmm.
I was always like, it was weird because like somebody came up to me like years after high school and they told the girl I was with that I was popular in high school, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, and I go, no, I just hung out with the popular people.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, well, doesn't that make you popular? No, I never felt that way. Yeah. I felt like they had to include me because I grew up with them.
Right.
I never felt like I belonged anywhere.
You felt like they were beholden to you in a way, or you were beholden to them in a way of like sort of loyalty, not necessarily out of like confidence and coolness.
Yeah, exactly. Like I grew up with the popular kids.
Right.
Like we lived in the same neighborhood.
Yeah.
So
I grew up with kids that were older than me. And so what it did for me was, I was big for my age, so I kind of looked like them, but I was like 5 or 6 years younger than these guys. So I had to act a little bit older, even though when you're that young, you can't really control how you act at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember them, like, you know, we'd be skateboarding or playing basketball, whatever it was we were doing, and they'd be like, you know, because I'm just like, ah. So in a way, I kind of understand.
DuckTales is on, guys. Yeah, I got God,
man. Screeching duck. He swam through the money. Not fitting in is something I can definitely relate to because I was also probably part of the popular crowd, but not the popular guy,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And God, that must have sucked, guys.
And Jay Snyder's damn legendary.
The half of a legend. See, I hung out with my parents' friends, so that... Not like when you're 12-year-old hanging out with 35-year-olds.
Yeah.
Looking back... Creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
I did some of that when I started getting into drugs.
Yeah, that's where it started.
I definitely smoked pot with peers' parents when I was like too young to be smoking with an adult.
Right.
Yeah, I was always such a good thief, you know, so I would just steal cartons of cigarettes and...
You was on the barter system.
Yeah, or I'd just steal cartons of cigarettes and be like, here, let me buy your love here.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know...
Did that manifest in other ways? Like, you give away your stuff a lot? Or, like... I used to give away my Star Wars action figures to the older kids in the neighborhood.
No.
And then sort of...
I probably would. I mean, the point of the story is what a good thief I was.
We already discussed.
I could steal the radio, leave the music there, you know that.
I understand. I stole the shit one
like
time.
Like a Jap.
Left
you know?
The smell. What about you, Jay? Did you get beat up as a kid by your parents or any adults?
Oh, fuck. Yeah, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I grew up where it was like you always hear, like, if your neighbors see you fucking up, your parents expect them to stop and fucking slap you upside the head.
Right,
you know?
Sure.
But it's like, I think Richard Pryor has a bit about it, like, yeah, you'd have to go pick your own switch
over.
So, you know, it's
that's
like...
some Southern shit.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it's a mental And I think that's what Pryor's bit was. It's like, that's a mental fuck, you know? It's like, what's a switch? Yeah, well, you're going to go out there and you're going to pick a weapon for me to beat you into submission with, yeah. You know?
Ours was like the threat of having to go pick a switch. But when it came down to like the psychological thing, my dad would lay out belts. And he'd be like, you have to pick a belt.
When you're real bad, he breaks out the championship fucking WWF belt and hit you with that fucker.
Well, and he's a lineman.
A what?
A boat oar.
Did he drill holes in it for
wind resistance? No, but he's broken a few on it.
Good God.
You got a fucking 8-foot fucking reach on it.
Yeah. You stay still now.
You stand
it's
right here.
It's the wind that's blowing me away. Yeah,
you stand right there. I'm going to walk into the kitchen and get a good swing on you. Just What about in school? Do you ever get the paddling in school?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
What part of the country did you grow up in?
You see, like, and of course, you know, like, I was kind of a, well, not kind of, I was an attention seeker. I was the kid that, you know, 2 weeks after school started, my desk was in the back by itself because I couldn't stop talking and fidgeting and stuff like that.
Yours is facing the opposite way, like fucking.
Grades? What were grades like?
Oh, my grades were great.
Yeah, we did well. I had horrible grades.
High school,
Do that, You want to do it on the kayaks?
No.
But it started dropping in high school, like as I started getting more and more into drugs.
But yeah.
Then when I went to college, it shot up. I did really well.
Where'd you go to school?
Well, I'm from Evansville, Indiana.
Okay.
And then after that, I went into the military for a few years, Navy.
Okay.
And then I went to San Francisco State University, and then I transferred to Indiana University.
Holy shit.
So I did like 3 years in Bloomington, Indiana.
Okay. And what'd you study?
Psychology.
Interesting. So you say you got into drugs in high school?
What? No, grade school.
Grade school?
Yeah.
Like 12?
Yeah, probably about that.
Weed first?
Yeah, started with weed. Well, started with alcohol and then weed.
So like how I got visibly, like I knew like what it was to be high. I think I even tripped on acid before I ever really got drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Was alcohol easier to get?
Yeah, definitely.
It was not where I was. I mean, it became easier, but like weed was always easier.
Yeah,
well, not even.
Well,
always,
we had a liquor store by my house that was known for serving minors.
Okay.
And I would get liquor from there. We had a few adults that we knew that would get it for us. And then we also would just go to liquor store and say, hey, guy, we'll give you $5 to get us some liquor.
Yeah, I spent most of my high school not drinking. I mean, I did a couple times, but they were so, my body did, like, it just, like, if I'm drinking Coke, or if I'm drinking Sprite, or a mixed drink, I just sip till it's gone, like, there's no patience. It's not like I'm dying of thirst, but even, I just drink whatever's in front of me, you know what I mean? And I think I did that with beer, and it just got me so sick that, like, the first two times I drank, I didn't drink for a year after that time, so... That, it was about 20 when I started like easing into it and actually doing it with a little bit of responsibility. But I think also I was an athlete in school, and so drinking always felt more like it tore me down.
Mm-hmm.
Like having a hangover was unbearable, whereas like weed was just kind of like... What did you do in college? Did you do drugs in college?
I did some, like, towards the end.
And what year
was this? I did do drugs in college, but I was really good about doing it after my studies were done. I was pretty focused.
Is that something your parents instilled in you, or is it just something you've always had? Or
No. I mean, well, it's probably because I went straight to school
after military. Got it.
So I kind of had some discipline at the time. It started slipping away over the years to where I'm at now, where I have none.
Right, but I'm sure coming right out of the military, it was very drilled in. I mean, that's what they do, right? So when was the first notion that you were wanted to do comedy? How old were you when you first thought?
It's like I had been preparing myself for a comedy routine for years before I knew anything about it. Like, I had no idea about the open mic system.
Yeah.
But yet, for years, I would say, hey, listen to this joke. This is for my routine. Like, I was working on a routine years before. And then finally, I went to the Comedy Caravan in Louisville, and I saw an MC that bombed. And I said, I can do it better than him.
Yeah.
And I called the club next day, and then got on the open mic.
Oh, nice.
And my first open mic, carloads of people from Evansville came to see me, so it was like magical.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just amazing.
And you did well then?
I did very well. I think almost everybody, or at least thinks they do well their first time.
It's almost like a mixture between doing better than you expected to do yourself and the love of an accepting audience.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it was for me, because I have it online. It's not like public, but I can go back and watch that first set that I did here. And the way I move, the way I talk, completely different.
Mm,
almost
sure.
Like...
Sure.
Probably more authentic in some ways, but I never repeated that set. I never did that set again. And I think probably the first 20 open mics I did, I just always did new material because I thought that's how it was supposed to go.
Right, right.
And I also didn't know what kind of comedy I wanted to do. So people were like, why do you always do different stuff? You're never going to get good at telling a joke if you don't tell it over and over again. And I was like, I don't even know what kind of jokes I want to tell. Why would I stop writing if I still have stuff I want to say? But now, you get like, after probably 3 or 4 years of road work, you kind of lock into a set.
Right.
And sometimes adding new stuff to it becomes like impossible.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Because when I'm on the road, I only have two goals. Get ass back and to move up.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I do squeeze in new material, but very small increments.
Yeah.
So
I don't take a lot of risks on the road like that
yeah.
in terms of however many people paid. You know what I mean? Like to see the show,
right.
I feel like I owe them a certain amount of, and I was watching videos, demo videos of myself the other day, looking for a good, just a demo video. And I stumbled across 6 sets in a row from Des Moines, Iowa. And one of them was just stood out over the rest. They were all good sets, but after watching one, the rest just seemed so much less than, and it was just the amount of energy I started with, and I never dropped it. It's like, if I start slow, I can build the energy. But if I start with that much energy, I don't drop it. You know what I mean? It's like, you can't slow down. You can for a minute before you go into your closer, but I started noticing that, and I got this 15-minute demo video out of it that I'm in love with. And I hate watching myself.
Oh, I hate watching myself.
That's the hardest thing to do, is to like watch it. But I watch it and I actually snicker at it, or maybe smile like, stupid. So then you always kind of had this in the back of your mind. I think I was probably 7. I saw Saturday Night Live and I was like, people do this for a job? And I was like, I kind of want to do that for a job, but I never had access to it. I didn't know anything about the open mic system. And once I did find an in to an open mic, I was... sent an email, got an email right back, booked like within 20 minutes of sending my first email for an open mic. I was like, what? I guess Saturday Night Live will send me an email
right
after the open mic, and then Hollywood.
Well, you know something, like after I did my first MC week, there's a bartender at the Comedy Caravan who's also a brilliant comic, like one of the best in the country in my opinion. And I went up to him jokingly after my first MC week. I go, hey, I got a lot of family coming in August. You think I'll be headlining by then? And I was joking, of course.
Yeah.
He goes, well, that depends. Are there 200 people in your family? Because now I get that.
Yeah.
I mean, if I have 200 people who are going to come to a show, they're going to figure out a way to headline me, whether I'm ready for it or
exactly.
not.
Exactly. Exactly. And we saw that one time me and Jay did a show with the guy who brought... most of the people really to a show, and so they're like, well, we're gonna go ahead and let him close it out or whatever. He didn't have the time, and it was hard for him to follow 3 professionals, but he did a pretty good job because the people were rooting for him.
Sure.
You know? And
sure, a situation like that, you gotta put him last.
I had a situation just last week where I produced a show at a different club, and a guy got in because he thought it was an open mic. And so we kind of just put him in as a guest set because nobody did any real due diligence. Like, what are you doing here? Who told you you could go up? It was just like everyone got introduced to him at a different point. So when it came time to do the lineup, somebody was like, yeah, and this guy's doing a guest set, I guess. And I was like, okay, 5 minutes after the MC. And he was like, okay. But he thought it was an open mic that he got booked on 2 months ago, but it ended up getting changed to a different show. And he came into the club, never checked in with anybody or anything like that. And I thought to myself, like, wow. because he stunk. I mean, it was not, he was just new, but there was like no laughter. It iced the show.
Who's this? Did we say a name?
No, this is a guy from last week that wandered onto the show.
Oh, right. Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, it was interesting. But I just think of like everybody's got a different entry to the stand-up. You know, like whatever has them actually get on the stage for the first time.
Right.
But that's like a powerful memory.
That was a Road Dogg open micer too. Like today, there's a million open mics at every bar. I mean, you don't have to leave town to go up 7 nights a week.
Yeah.
But back then, we didn't have that. And so we would come to Dayton all the time. We were going to Indianapolis. We were going to St. Louis. Like every week, we'd work our job and then hop in a car and drive for hours just to get, you know, 5 minutes of stage time.
Yeah.
Three sometimes. Always like in 3 minutes. A guy one time told me what it is like, if you bring 5 people, come down to Huntington, West Virginia, you can get 3 minutes. I was like, is that a real fucking thing?
Right. That's Chicago right there. 3 minutes is fucking, that's a showcase. And that's funny too, because I did the same thing. I think I went out to like Indiana. I mean, even when I first started working the road, I would take gigs that were, I was going to lose money on because I needed the practice of doing the 20 minutes.
Yeah. When I first started emceeing, and I was emceeing on the road, and I had this system where I would bring tuna fish with me and mayonnaise packets, and I would have like the free hotel breakfast.
Yeah.
And I'd eat the tuna fish, and I'd eat at the club for free at night.
Yeah.
Just trying
to still do that. I do tuna, and I do a Uncle Ben's 90-second rice.
Yeah.
And I just dump the tuna right into the rice, stir it up, and I just eat it out of the package. I call it a walking sushi. It's like a walking taco, but it's
I do the knockoff Uncle Ben. It's Uncle Jemima.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just a picture of Dick Gregory on the front of it.
Him got a wiener.
Oh, that's funny.
So we had a show last night here at the Wiley. It was pretty fucking fantastic. What was the meetup group? What were those people?
It's a meetup. We have them in each city, in Louisville, Indianapolis, and here. And it's basically free comedy club tickets.
Yeah.
And we don't do them very often. So last night was the first time we'd done it in a while, so it had a really good turnout.
That was really neat. And there was a good crowd. It was a little bit of, you know, like sometimes when there's too many comps, you have a little bit too much chatter from the audience.
Sure.
It was like one or two people, but they weren't bad.
Yeah, that's the worst kind of hecklers. The ones that are polite and having a good time.
Yeah.
Because you can't slam them. You know?
Yes.
They're the hardest ones to deal with. The ones that are like enjoying the show.
Yeah, you gotta be like, yeah, that's right, buddy. Anyway, you know.
How about the one that's not heckling? They're like just like repeating your punchline.
Yeah.
It's like, so they're like not doing it to be rude at all, but they just.
I did a joke last night where I did it different than when I wrote it, and I basically did it the same way since I wrote it. And last night I changed it because I started hearing people spit out the punchline 2 tags before I got there. You know what I mean? And it was like, that's my own dyslexia, right? Like I just did the joke backwards. And so I started looking at other jokes I was doing completely fucking backwards, where I'm almost giving away the punchline and then kind of explaining to them, this is why it's funny.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was really kind of exploring the space last night of just being really thinking about the material instead of going on to autopilot. You know, sometimes you're just, the words are coming out of your mouth, but you're like, I'm going to run out of something to drink while I'm up here. I wonder if I should get a shot. You know, you're still talking.
Yeah.
You're still talking, but like you're having a...
Yeah, that's always weird to me, like, because you are talking, but you're completely thinking about something else. And you're like...
Right.
It's just weird. I never did that before in my life.
Stand-up was the first time I ever noticed doing it.
Yeah, but you do it out of necessity.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I got the first part of my set is almost always the same. It's them getting to know me, blah, blah, blah. But then the Rolodex is flipping based on their responses on
what direction I'm going to go.
Oh,
wow, look at the tits on row two. Man, did I wipe my ass good enough? All right, just all the, I mean, to each his own, but you know.
Yes. But what are you thinking on the inside?
I just gave away my bits.
Yeah, you're just doing material now. Yeah, that's a weird, I remember it was the first time I did the open mic here, was the first time I finished my set and went faster than I thought it was going to. And so I was like, what am I going to do for my last minute? And I just pulled something out of my ass, kind of improv'd it because I was.
It was a gerbil.
It was a gerbil. It's not a condom. Ta-da! But it, in some regards, was funnier than the stuff I had written. What I was improv, because what I realized in that moment was like, once you got them, you can take them anywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if you don't get them, you can't take them anywhere.
Right.
So it was like, I once I gained their trust and respect, it was like I was just fucking being silly and they were laughing. And I was like, man, I've never been that free since then. You know what I mean? Because it's like you just keep getting more and more serious about it, more and more scripted, removing words, but then you end up in this fucking cycle of like where you could do your whole set and you're literally like grocery shopping in the back of your head.
Sure, right? Sure. And I think what most what gave me the most freedom is when I stopped worrying about time.
Yeah.
Once it became easy to do 30 minutes, I mean now, you know, 30 minutes is a cakewalk.
Yeah.
But there's a time it's like, I mean, even like as an MC going, oh my gosh, if nobody has a birthday, I'm screwed. Right.
Somebody better be getting married tonight.
Yeah, the, that is when you're first starting, you're like, you know, someone says, how much time you got? I got 25, I mean, how much you need, you know? But then you get up there and it's going horrible, and oh, you go through all of it in 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you still got 13, that level of panic that sets
in. Well, I record my set, and sometimes I hit this button that says skip silence, and what it'll do is if it's not like up to the peak level.
It doesn't even record your set when you hit that.
Right. It basically only records them laughing. Right?
Really?
So, yeah. So, because it takes the highest level and that's when it decides to record. And so what happened to me the first couple times before I realized that was happening, I'd be on stage and it would say 3 minutes and I'm going into my 13 minute joke. Freaking the fuck out. And I'm like...
Yeah, like, I know I've been up here more than 3 minutes.
So that's when I started recording and turning the screen off, because I was like, you know what? You know. Even the first time I went up, I knew what 5 minutes was. You know what I mean? In fact, the first comedy festival I ever did, a real comedy festival.
Which one was it?
Cape Fear. I did I was on mushrooms almost the whole week, but I did a set that was kind of like roasting the whole experience of being at the festival. It wasn't like putting the festival down or anything like that, just kind of like it was like being at camp, you know, everyone's parents are in the audience waiting for their fucking kid to show their crafts so they can get the fuck out of here. And
is that a competition festival?
It's just a hang, man.
I think really, those are the best ones.
Yeah, it's probably one of the best ones.
Sorry.
Oh, you're good. And but I did my mic drop wasn't recording or anything like that. We're supposed to be doing 6 minute sets, and the first three comics before me all did like 12 and 15 minutes and shit like that.
Yeah, they gotta show. They gotta show the fucking, you know, the industry there that they got. They got the time, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I don't do festivals, because I already work for those people. Last thing I want is for them to actually see my set. I think like,
you can only lose.
Right. If you're already working for the industry that they're scouting people out.
Yeah.
Why would you want to take a chance at going up in front of them?
Because you're already getting
it. They go, philosophy, yeah.
Hey, we like this guy. We should continue to book him.
Yeah.
Or they're going to be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What were we thinking?
Yeah. Who referred this asshole?
Yeah.
Had you never seen him before?
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good point.
It's one of those things. I've always thought that, like, I'd rather be working than doing a festival.
Absolutely.
So if there's... And that happened to me when I was at Cape Fear, where I missed, you know, I dinged a week of work. It was probably like 3 nights of work or whatever, but still that's money that would have been coming in instead of like $1,000 going out for a vacation, essentially. And I just left a bad taste in my mouth as far as like, and then the next festival I did was Laugh Fest for the Yoders, and they paid me, and it was a contest for a chance to win more money, and they put me up. So it was kind of like, okay, now.
Is that bad for Laugh Fest?
It was Best of the Midwest.
Yeah, that part is paid.
I filled in for BT as a...
you were an alternate or something like that? Or what?
Appropriation. I mean, he was like the only black male on the bill, but he was also like gonna win it in a walk compared to the people he was up against, which is why I think he pulled out. And then they asked me.
I think he ended up getting fucking the Bahamas or whatever. He
got, whatever Atlantis, it was. Yeah. Whatever. It was a similar situation to what you're saying in that like, all I could do is fail here, because if I don't win and I'm a 20-year veteran, you know.
Right, right.
The only, he was, Mike Merrifield was in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
it's Merrifield's like, over 20, I mean, he's a 20-year guy, right?
He is, but when they go on tour together, BT's doing the heavy lifting.
BT's a beast.
He's a fucking, yeah, he's, I mean, and I love Mike Merrifield. And this is my Mike Merrifield. I remember the first minute I met him, we were at the Dayton Funny Bone. I was sitting at the bar. I wasn't on the show. He comes in. He's like, you the MC? And I was like, no. He's like, but you're a comic. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah, you got the look. And I was like, no, he didn't know. I was like a month in. So I was like,
I got the look. Yeah.
And then I watched this.
Homeless. Set. It's called Homeless and Hungry. That's the look.
That's exactly right. Desperate. And but no, he is. He has a wheelbarrow joke, man. I can't even begin to tell it, but it's one of the funniest jokes.
Who's this, Merrifield?
Yeah. He's got a lot of dirty stuff too, and you know, Merrifield's a fucking road dog.
Yeah.
That's like
he absolutely is a road dog. A motherfucker would drive from fucking Vegas to Wisconsin overnight.
And for somebody that's like living the dream that so many other comics would kill somebody to have, he's just like, eh. He was like, I just booked 12 weeks of work for a whopping $3,000 or something like that. And I was like, I'll kill you for that.
He had a post.
Yeah.
He had a post.
Well,
go ahead.
It's just like, you know, the grass is always greener. Like, when I first started, all I wanted to do was work for Funny Business and
Comedy Zone.
And Comedy Zone. You know, that's all I wanted. And, you know, after you do it, you're like, oh my God. I worked so hard to get to do the road, and then immediately start complaining about the driving.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I gotta go to South Dakota.
Going to Florida again.
Again, yes. I'm in Florida, like, freaking every 2 months.
I started like, did Jamie just move to Florida?
Yeah.
What the fuck is that? Is he coming back to the Midwest? What's going on here?
Well, I mean, there's certain states that I do a lot of, and right now, Florida's always been a big one, Michigan, North Carolina, and now West Virginia seems to be going well for me. But my in-laws were living in Florida, and so I was trying to get booked there because we would go early or stay late. And
right.
I could never get booked in Florida where I know people. I know a ton of people in Jacksonville.
They got a club there.
I know, but I can't
get around. Yeah, they got the Comedy Zone and Jacksonville.
You know what's funny? Because when are people like name venues that they would love to work, and like I'm working them, I'm like, well, it can't be that hard to get in.
Yeah. Because, I'm working it. That's how I feel about it, too. Yeah. Like, they let me in. Right. So, yeah.
How hard can it be? Like, they work me all the time.
Yeah, they obviously need to add more to the rotation. What's going on, man?
Yeah.
I wanted to work Florida so bad, and this was the first year I got to do it, and I got to do it 4 weeks over the summer.
Yeah, where'd you work?
Tampa, Orlando, Cocoa Beach, and I did a couple shows in Jacksonville, but they weren't in clubs.
Yeah, I did Orlando and Jacksonville, and then Fort Myers. I know I'm leaving something out. Some other stuff I've done there. Anyway,
it's one of those things, man. Like, what's your favorite state to work in?
My favorite state to work in?
That's a weird one.
I don't know, man. It seems like.
Dude, Ohio's my favorite state to work in, bro, and I'll tell you why.
North Carolina. I have a lot of fun in North Carolina for some reason.
I do too. I can't lie. I would, if I could get, that's the number one reason I want to be with Comedy Zone is because I used to live in North Carolina, and I feel like I understand that. Even my country accent, it wavers between West Virginia and North Carolina. Sometimes it's got a tinge of Mississippi, but most of the time when I'm doing it, it's a more refined North Carolinian style country accent.
A lot of fun in Michigan too.
Oh, Michigan's great,
yeah. I would say, I don't know if it's because I live in Ohio or whatever and you just feel comfortable because you're familiar and all that stuff, but yeah, really anywhere in the Midwest is
fucking awesome. Yeah. I would do Zanies, the showcase, Zanies at Rosemont in Chicago, and I would have fantastic sets there, but everywhere else I went in the city, even the Laugh Factory, I would always kind of fucking struggle. Laugh Factory would be 3 minutes clean, and you had to wait in line unless you knew somebody or something, and it was one of those. One, the coolest thing I ever got to do, though, was interview this girl, Kristen Toomey, who she's fucking killing it right now. I worked with her.
Her dad's a comic also, right?
Is it? I don't know. I don't think so. What?
Yeah.
No.
No?
No, I don't think so.
I think so.
Kristen Toomey. She's like 37, maybe? She's from Chicago.
I'm pretty sure her...
Blonde?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that her dad is an old...
Really? I didn't know that. I mean, it would make sense, dude. She's a beast. Anyway, I was interviewing her at the Laugh Factory for the podcast early on, and it was completely unusable because it was just too much fucking residual sound, and I hadn't mastered editing yet. But Jamie Masada was there passing people for the showcase right next to us. And it was the craziest shit. Like, the people that were trying to get past had no business. Like, if I ran the open mic here, and these guys were, like, coming in every week or
Mike
whatever.
Mike Toomey. Is
there a really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Clean comedian, yeah.
That makes a lot more fucking sense. Hello, we's recording in here. The hell you want?
So?
Come is around. Cover phone call?
Listen, Harambe. We's trying to do real business in here. You trying to take some white baby.
What's up, buddy?
What's up, Keith Urban?
Keith, you know Jamie Ellie?
I think I've met you
Jamie
before.
Ellie, Keith
How
Urban.
How you doing? Nice
How
to
you
meet you.
Have a seat. Get in there, buddy.
Get in there, buddy.
Harambe. Good to see you. You feeling better?
Talking about bad. Still can't
Oh,
talk
fuck.
About,
yeah.
What happened, man?
Bug or whatever it was.
You got that Corey Mintz? Cancers? Could be worse.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
that's an edit.
Could be worse. You could have the John Craigs. Nobody knows what the hell that is.
Yeah, where you're an albino. You know, John Craigs got that albino. You know.
He got that liver damage, and he don't even drink, which is weird. When I met John, he was like, "I'm pretty healthy. I drink a 2 liter of Country Time lemonade every day." I was like, "You know that
Country Time lemonade?
Like drinking kerosene, right? It's just all sodium and sugar." But no, this has been a fucking little cool little hang we got here going on in the green room at Wiley's Comedy Club, 652. Show starts 7:15.
Yep. We want to discuss what we're doing here.
Yeah, I'm gonna open. I'm gonna host this motherfucker, host the shit out of it, and then I'll do.
What do you want me to do?
What are you gonna do? You got a big group coming?
Next show.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few coming this show, but. A big group coming next show. Or okay. Actually, I don't know what size they are. Usually it's like 12 or 15 or whatever.
Okay.
I don't even know 12 or 15 people. I got 3 friends on Facebook. You're all sitting
right here. They're all right here.
Just got Jamie the other night.
Jamie's like, you just lost one.
Unfollow.
My jacket over there. Delete. Yeah,
hand
it to me.
Thank you. You did fucking fantastic last night, and
yeah,
I literally was thinking, no. Okay. What I would say is this, what I read off of you before was apprehension.
Oh, yeah.
A sense of apprehension.
Oh, sure.
But when you got off stage, it was, no, that's what I normally do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was like, and then you said... About like closing the show or whatever, and so then I was like, I would have never guessed that, but now it makes sense.
Right.
But whatever, like when I was halfway through my set, the first thought I had was like, okay, calm down, guys. This shit's not that funny, you know. But they were like really into the show. I mean, and Doug really got them going too. And so it was one of those things where I was like, if they're gonna be this good for me, then there's nothing you could do that would help them. I mean,
well, I'm terrified every time. I mean, every time I'm
really
terrified.
Like how terrified?
Oh, like terrified.
Like terrified. Almost nauseous.
Yeah.
Like, what's your success rate? What do you bat?
What's over 1,000?
Yeah.
You know.
2 million.
Ain't never bombed yet. Yeah. Tell you that.
Except for one time I did it on.
Yeah, I don't even know. I can't relate to people talking about bombing.
Yeah.
No, you know what? I'm at this point now where. I look at bombing as a statistical thing. So when I do bomb, I'm like, well, I got that out of the way.
Yeah.
Now I'm good for another 20, 30, 40 shows.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Like, I almost get relieved when it happens. Now, like, if it happened tonight, I would kill myself. But, you know, like especially like, if it's like a Thursday night or something, I'm like, ooh, all right, rest of the weekend's going to rock.
Finally got there. Yeah, that's,
you know.
I'll tell you this. What I find when it's rough like that is... You're earning it more than you've ever earned it And so if you can dig deep and get a couple giggles when it's really not going well and it's obvious, sometimes that is all it takes to
get. Well, like, that's what my last night, I've had horrible sets that I've been thrilled with because a new joke will work.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, oh.
Weren't we talking about that last night?
Yeah, last night.
Yeah.
Like the rest set was shit. People are like, ooh, dude. I'm like, no, I loved it, man.
Yeah. My new bit works.
Did you see that riff?
Yeah.
Did you see that riff where I told that guy, shut the fuck up?
I'm you had one where you recorded Doug's set last night, and then somebody was on their phone, and and I don't know if he asked for the phone or they just handed it to him.
Yeah.
He was like, fucking quit calling while he's in a comedy club, fucking
Matthew Johnson
or whatever, you fucking dick.
Yeah.
And I got like a big response, and then I felt like then they were able, you know, like it fucking helped. It helped the...
Well, what it kind of did was break that wall. What Doug did to start the show that I disagree with is he acted needy. At the very beginning where he was like, hey guys, we got a really great show tonight, so I'm gonna need a lot of energy from you guys, before he really gave them anything. To me, it's like, when I MC, as you'll see tonight, I put on a masterful performance.
I'm so excited to watch this now.
Crowd control.
Listen, I'm gonna be taking notes. I don't want you to think that I'm actually like, write it down.
You know what? You know what he was saying about being in front of the industry and when you've already been passed.
Yeah. All you can do from here is fail, motherfucker. Which I plan to do extraordinarily tonight. when it goes bad for me, Jay will be the first one, especially on shows that I'm on with Jay. If it's gonna go bad, I'll go all the way. You know what I mean? It's like if
Jim's like, oh great.
I don't think we're facing anything like that tonight. I'm talking about like a Sunday night or a Wednesday night in a rough environment or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where it's like, okay, like once I realize like it's trench warfare, I actually get a little excited. You know what I mean? I had a really rough set in Orlando, and it wasn't until a guy in the front row, I was going into my closer where I was talking about my niece. She told me some jokes, and he's like, sounds like she told you your whole set, or whatever. And like he said that like loud enough for his table to hear, and they were kind of like, you could tell he was the dick of the table. So I was like, oh, sorry, what was that? You know, it's like went right into him. He's like, what? And I was like, do you think my 6-year-old niece helped me write all my jokes? I was like, you seem kind of angry. I was like, I get it. It's the hairline, and his whole table was like, and it was like the one white table in a sea of black people. So it was like, and that's all they wanted.
Oh, that poor table.
I was having a rough set, but once I started roasting them, it was like, I had them. It was like, they just wanted to see that I could do it.
Yeah, a lot of times I think that they like to think.
You recorded a set of mine that went really bad.
One of my greatest fucking...
Where is this?
Look at, not only was it just horrific, but the whole time you can hear Jay giggling.
Yeah, he does that in the background.
Well, here's the thing. Jamie, we're in the green room. This is the funny bone. And the headline, Jamie's just... we're just talking over across town here.
Right.
And so we're just bullshitting in between. And Jamie tells us... premise or whatever, and the headliner goes, dude, that is fucking hilarious. He's dude, yeah, you gotta
you're doing it tonight,
and Damon
it's
Williams,
kind of okay, it's a black crowd, and normally I do well with black crowds, but this was a bit of a talk about race.
Mm-hmm.
And I opened with it.
Oh,
had I not like opened with it, it probably would have been okay.
Trust, you need,
but it's like
trust.
Here's this white guy, and he opens with something that's...
But
like,
yeah, but you know what?
But it was
what?
A true story.
Yeah,
and it was,
but when you open with that new joke, that's where I feel like you gotta put it, because that's where it puts the most pressure on you. And it's also like...
Well, this is where people were wanting to kill me. Like, there was one guy sitting in the front that I was legitimately nervous about. I thought he was gonna jump up on stage. And the whole time, Jay just... You know, like, it's funny because when you're bombing... There's two types of comics. They're the comics that are haters, that are glad you're bombing and they're loving it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's your friends, they're laughing because it's hilarious.
Yeah. You know? I just love to see how people deal with it. You know? That's funny.
Oh, it's hilarious when your friends are bombing. It's hilarious.
Well, the worst thing is, like, I was watching this guy, Wonder Doug, in Columbus, and he's a pretty eccentric comic, but like, it had been like an open mic contest kind of a thing, and he was the only professional comic, mm-hmm. you know? So when he got up there, I was like, oh, I could breathe. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, he's telling fuck, I'm dying in the back. But the audience is like, right. This is aggressive.
That's the worst when you're giving it hell and you can only hear laughs coming from the
yeah.
back.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this is not going well.
I used to open with a joke where I would say, this would be my opener. Like, I'd get up on stage and I'd be like, oh, I just came all the way from Dayton, Ohio. And boy, are my balls empty. And the only people that ever laughed at that were comics from the back of the room. Oh my gosh, look at this. It's the white baby what Harambe tried to kill.
Del Blomquist. Del, you know Jamie?
What's up, man?
Jamie Outley, Del Blomquist.
How you doing?
Do you know Harambe from Cincinnati?
Yeah, I got you down key.
Posthumously. What's up, Del?
All right, let's wrap this and then we can pick it up.
We got a full episode. We can pick it up after. We'll do Adventure Cast after this.
Just to touch up.
And we're also going to do some live. We're going to do some live streaming. I need you to stream my set.
How much time are you going to do opening?
10 to 15.
Okay.
What do you want me to do?
30.
Whatever you need. 30, you want me to do 30?
You can do more than 30 if you want.
All right, look, how much more? What do you want?
75.
75, you got it, buddy.
He's like, I'm trying to do a hot 15.
You want me to leave you a good 15-minute spot?
Why don't you split the time?
I can go over 15.
It really doesn't matter.
I don't think it's a good idea for the first comic to go over 15. But, I mean, I don't want to put any pressure on you.
Yeah, so you're doing 15. I leave an hour and 15. So that's, you mean do 35?
You did 55 last night, right?
Did I do 55? I thought you did. That much.
I thought you did for sure.
All
I know is that when you got to 45, I was like, she could keep going.
Do you want me to do 35, 40?
Okay, yeah, 35, 40, and I'll do the same.
Perfect.
And then do you want to go last since you got a big group on the next show?
Oh, look at this shit. I didn't know this was on the table. Jamie, you fucking host. Fuck.
I mean, it's totally up to you.
I originally set this up as co-headliners.
Okay.
It makes me sweet.
Yeah, you know he's not that good, right?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we know. It's obvious. Yeah.
Him ain't even got no wiener.
Dream, your sense, it's alright. We'll be dancing
He looks mistaken, like someone else's dream. He says it's alright, we'll be dancing tonight. There's an angel in your pocket. She seems kind of lost, like a southern bound wind. She whispers, it's okay, we'll dance. Whisper.